Okay, so it's 1 o'clock, so we might kick off then, Kate. So I'd just like to introduce Kate Vandervoort. She'll be facilitating our session today around developing a social media strategy. Kate's done a session with us previously, and it was a wonderful and informative session. So I'll hand over to Kate now, and welcome everyone.
Great. Thank you, Catherine. It's really great to be here with you all today. The last session that we ran was very much an introduction to social media, and today I want to take it to the next level around how do we really develop a sustainable strategy for social media. Often, if we're in particularly small organisations, it can be really challenging to know where to start, what to focus on, how to keep on top of all of it, given that our resources are quite stretched. And I imagine that we've got a bit of a mix in the room in terms of size of organisations, so I'll try and make it as relevant to both for organisations that have a couple of staff that might be able to focus on this, or those that just have one. As I mentioned, please feel free to ask questions as we go. We'll certainly leave time for questions and discussion at the end, but I really want to make it as relevant for you as possible. I do just want to say that we are doing another webinar next year, which will be more focused on the how-to technical side of things. So I'm really going to keep today at that strategy level about how do you make this work strategically for your organisation rather than how do each of the individual platforms work. So I want to start off with how do we get started. Now, when you're in an organisation that wants to do social media, often there's one person in the organisation that is using Facebook personally or is passionate about communicating on forums and communities, and often there's one person that champions the discussion about getting started in social media. But the first question that you as an organisation needs to ask, is why are we doing this? And if you're doing it because everybody else is doing it, or you're doing it because the boss says so or the board says so, they're not always great reasons to get started in social media, and you can end up in more trouble than it's worth if you don't ask the important questions up front. You want to look at where it is that it sits within the organisation. So again, for some of you it might just be that there's one of you that this absolutely depends on. But for some organisations there are the conversations to have around, does it sit best with IT, does it sit best with marketing, does it sit best with student or community support? And we'll talk a little bit more about those skill sets and where it might sit best within an organisation. You definitely want to ask who has the right skill set. Just because someone knows how to use Facebook personally doesn't make them necessarily the best person, the best person to do social media. Just because they have an IT background doesn't mean they're the best person. Just because they're the youngest in the organisation doesn't mean they're the best person. So we'll have a bit of a look at, what skills are really required for this. Do you need to bring in extra support? Sometimes it's about bringing in someone who really knows digital marketing and online community management. For larger organisations, that can certainly be beneficial to bring someone into the organisation that has those skills. For smaller organisations, it's often about upskilling staff that are already there. And that's part of, doing webinars like this are really valuable to upskill staff that might not necessarily be digitally minded or have a lot of experience, but certainly know your organisation and can communicate on behalf of your organisation. You really want to look at who your target audience is and where they are online. This is a great way to start finding and connecting with people who are potential students. So I'm approaching most of today from the perspective of if you're doing social media so that you can stay connected to your current students, to raise awareness about your organisation and find new students or members, then you want to look at who are those people, what kind of demographic do they have, and where are they already participating online? Because if you can start to join some of those conversations on behalf of your organisation, then you're able to connect in a very targeted way to your audience. Then you want to be looking at what level do you want to play at. Now, if you're just starting, I really recommend that you don't jump in and start posting marketing messages about your organisation. You want to listen first. So find other organisations like yours and follow them. Become a fan of their page, follow them on Twitter. Have a look at what other organisations are doing in this space. You want to research what's working and what's not working. And you certainly want to get some training or skill yourself up in how to manage these platforms properly. And today is certainly part of that. After you've done that and you start to be proactive in what you're posting, you want all of your focus in building these online communities to be about member satisfaction. So how can you add value to the people that you're wanting to connect with? I'll talk a bit about the ratio of the kind of content that you post, because most small organisations, in fact I'd say probably 95% of small organisations and small businesses switch on social media and use it as a broadcast mechanism to promote their products and services. And it just doesn't work. You'll get a little bit of traction, you'll get the odd bit of engagement, but it certainly won't drive good results for your organisation. So the way to build a community, it's almost like a bank account, you want to put into the bank account before you're asking for anything in return or promoting your message. And then once you have a community of people who are engaged with you and interested in what it is that you're creating in terms of a community, and that means conversation, it means engagement, not one-way dialogue, that's when you can really start to look at marketing your products and services and using it as a lead generation tool. And once you've kind of covered all those basics, that's when you really start looking at which platforms you're on. So often people focus on the platforms first and the strategy later, and I really suggest if you haven't started yet, then I would do it the other way around. I'm going to skip through these because these are really just questions that you need to be thinking of as an organisation. What budget will be allocated? Social media is not free. Yes, the tools are free, but it takes resources to manage these, so staff resources, and it takes tools, and for most small organisations those tools are free, but we'll talk a bit about tools later. What are your response time targets? Now often this is one that's only asked by big organisations because that's how they measure success, but it's really important that you as an organisation decide on some structure around this. So is your goal to respond within 24 hours? Ideally, you'd want to be responding less than that, in less time than that. And certainly anything longer than 24 hours is people on social media are, they've moved on to the next thing, they've found another way to get their needs met if you're not able to respond to them in a timely way. What's your ideal resolution time? So if someone has an issue or a question, not just how are you going to respond, but how are you going to resolve that issue or question for them? How will you engage with complaints? And if we've got time at the end, we can certainly talk a bit more about that because I know that that's a big concern for some people. How do you engage with trolling, flaming and abuse? So if people are behaving in a way that's not appropriate online on your social media communities, how are you going to deal with those? How will that be documented? And you definitely want to have a staff policy and a crisis plan and a communications plan. And they don't have to be complicated. There's plenty of templates online and examples online where people have made these readily available, and you can have a look at those and adapt them to your own organisation. But you want to be prepared. The last statistic I read on this, and you always take statistics with a bit of a grain of salt, is that 76% of social media crises or disasters or things that go wrong can be avoided with having those three things, a staff policy, a crisis plan and a communications plan. And it's a bit like taking an umbrella. It never rains when you end up taking your umbrella. You want to be prepared for this, and things should go well. I'm just seeing a question. I'm not able to keep an eye on all the questions, so we will address them at the end. But Liz, flaming and trolling. Trolling is where people target others online to be abusive. So we see that happening with celebrities a lot, that they get targeted. And flaming is when everyone else jumps in and flames a situation. So they're new age words in terms of online technology, but trolling and flaming, it's basically abuse or bullying online. And it's certainly, depending on the age demographic, you know, for some organisations that deal with a lot of younger people, there's certainly those issues. And the way to best deal with those is to have some really clear guidelines that just say, this is an online community to provide support for our, I'm going to call them students. You may have different words for describing your target demographic, but for the sake of this, I'll call them students. This online community is to support our students and connect with new people who might be interested in our products and services. We don't tolerate any abuse, insulting language, etc. I'm just making this up off the top of my head, but by putting some clear guidelines in place, then you can certainly deal with it very quickly if it does come up on your communities. In terms of building the right team or the right person, the right skills, you want to think about technical versus fundraising may or may not be an issue for some not-for-profit organisations, and I know we may have some online, versus content. So sometimes it sits in an IT department because it's assumed that people with IT knowledge know how to use social media platforms. Rarely is that, in fact, I don't think I've ever worked with a company or an organisation where putting social media into the IT team is the right place for it to sit. They may certainly have the technical knowledge, but they don't necessarily have the conversational and, I have to be careful, I've gotten myself in a lot of trouble with IT professionals over this one. They don't necessarily have the right persona or tone for social media, because this isn't about being technical. People are really keen to connect with people, so you want to have a human element. Content specialists can be fantastic on social media. However, they can be quite focused on just delivering the right content and not so much targeting, say, the marketing or promotional opportunities. So there is no one size fits all. It depends on every organisation is quite different. But just think about who has those right skills. And ideally, you want them to be people who are able to pick up the phone, email, who are great face-to-face as well. Because a lot of disasters, if you like, can happen on social media where people ask a question and it's dealt with in a very technical, uniform way, and they don't feel like they've been heard or addressed as a human being, and that can certainly cause issues. And you want people to be able to take it offline if they need to. Just because they can use social media doesn't mean that someone's the best candidate to be running your social media strategy. You definitely want to have a clear social media policy that articulates the culture of your organisation. Again, it doesn't have to be complicated. If you Google social media policy, there are hundreds of them online. Some of them are very simple, some of them are very complicated. But I will say that from a legal perspective, it's very difficult to dismiss or reprimand staff if you don't have some kind of policy in place. And there are all sorts of legal cases underway at the moment about staff who've been dismissed because of their behaviour on social media, and without a policy in place that clearly articulates etiquette, what's appropriate, what's not appropriate, you can't actually dismiss someone for what they do on social media. It's always a good idea to have clear training documents with do's and don'ts. So if you do have more than one person, or even if it is one person, but you want to have a quick cheat sheet of how it is that you manage social media, that can really help for things like holidays or sick days. What you don't want to do is create a whole social media strategy around a person and then that person leaves or goes on holidays and the whole strategy collapses. Reverse mentoring, we do this with larger organisations generally, but it, even for people that are in small organisations, find a young person. If social media is not your strong suit, if you kind of look at Facebook and scratch your head and it's not intuitive, find somebody either in your organisation or someone that you know in your own personal life who can give you some mentoring about it. You know, it does take a particular mindset, and I've had some conversations with more mature staff members in organisations that it doesn't really matter how it's described, how it's taught, that it's almost like the neural pathways just are not there. I know, for just as a little aside, my grandparents, you know, all of this social media stuff is so foreign to them. They do have a computer, they do use email, but the whole concept of social media just really befuddles them, and it doesn't matter how I explain it to them, that it just isn't something that they can comprehend. And I know I heard recently my grandmother saying to someone, I'm not entirely sure what it is that Kate does, but I'm so very, very proud of her because she does it so well. And I think that just speaks volumes that, you know, this changes at such a rapid rate. And for some people working in traditional organisations with systems and processes that are very paper-based or they don't use social media personally, it can be quite challenging to get your head around. So reverse mentoring can be really successful in terms of learning some of those skills. You want to look at how do you scale the team around specific events. So it might be that at enrolment time you're getting a larger volume of activity on your page. It might be at graduation time. I'm just hypothesising some of these things. You'll know what it is in your own organisation. But if you've only got one person and the volume does increase, you want to make sure that there's a couple of other people available who know enough that they can help. Now, for most small organisations, that's not really an issue. But if you've got an organisation of any, a medium-sized organisation even, there can be times when you hold an event, and if people feel that they're not being addressed or communicated with in a timely way, things can start to go a bit sour. For some organisations, if they have multiple locations, you want to look at where the social media person or team is physically located. And where this is really important is if you've got a mixture of marketing, student support, if you've got a mixture of functions that are happening in social media, then you want to make sure that people have got access to the right information in a really timely way. Now, I moved to Queensland last year and it hasn't changed my business that significantly because I can still travel and I can use all the fabulous online technologies that are available, and when we're managing doing work with clients, a lot of that now is done remotely. So it's certainly possible, but you need to make sure that you've got the systems and processes set up to support your social media staff in adequately managing these platforms. It can often be really helpful to have a review team, and even if that's only a couple of people, but outside of the people that are in this on a day-to-day basis. Sometimes you just can't see the wood for the trees, and it can be really helpful to have somebody to go to with a situation if someone's made a complaint, if there's a tricky conversation that's happening online. It can just be really helpful to have a review team that can give you a different perspective. And you definitely want to have a clear crisis plan for when things go wrong. We won't have time to do a huge amount on this today, but what I suggest is that you sit down with staff in your organisation and ask, do some scenario planning. So ask the question, where do complaints or issues arise in other parts of the organisation? Do they come in by phone, by email, face-to-face? And what are those issues? So if you can identify, say, the top 10 criticisms, negative feedbacks, complaints that might come into your organisation. Maybe you don't have 10 that would come in. It might be 5, might be 2. But then look at how would you deal with that if that happened on Facebook? How would you deal with that if it happened on Twitter? And that's what we call scenario planning. And it can be a really useful exercise to document some of that so that if it does happen, you know exactly what to do and you know how to respond to that. And as I said, if we have time at the end, we'll certainly talk a bit more about dealing with negative criticism. As I said, social media is not free. It does require resourcing. And you've got everything from free tools like Google Analytics and the free versions of things like Hootsuite, right up to the incredibly expensive tools like Radian 6, which are thousands of dollars per month, and it really depends on the size of your organisation and it depends on the objectives that you're trying to achieve. If the purpose for you is to raise awareness, support your students and connect with your local community, you can absolutely do that with free tools. Things like Hootsuite you might want for $6 a month dashboard, which you know gives you some more functionality. If you're a larger organisation, you generally need your volume on social media will be larger and you generally need to justify your own role and the outcomes of social media, and you may need more complicated tools or more sophisticated tools to be able to do that. The one that's rarely budgeted for in organisations is time, and people go, oh yeah, social media is easy, it's quick, it's free. Those things are all true at one level. However, to do social media well, it takes time and it takes a focused approach. And if you don't allocate the right resources, it will only ever be mediocre for the organisation. And I think then you do need to ask the question about what's the point of doing it. In my opinion, you either allocate enough resources to make it successful or put those resources to something else that's going to give you better results. It might be a Google AdWords campaign, it might be your website, it might be that those resources are better allocated somewhere else. You want to really look at who are your key stakeholders and your influencers. Now this is again different for every organisation, but your stakeholders in social media might be potential students, alumni, staff, researchers, media, other educational institutions, and local community. And once you've identified those stakeholders, you can take that to the next level and look at who influences those stakeholders. So let's say that you're an educational institution that works with people who have left school early. It might be that high schools are an influencer of your potential future students. So you might look at how you can connect with those, with them online. It might be parents, it might be peers, media, alumni, you know, people who've attended your courses, people who've done your training or your workshops are your best advocates. So how can you help them influence future students? So there's definitely a piece around stakeholder management and who it is that you're going to engage with. Now I want to run through just a very, is that a hand
that's
up?
That's me. Sorry, that I just wanted to put, Lynette just asked a question in the chat around if there's sort of a rough guideline around measuring success. I don't know if Lynn's able to come up to take the mark or not, but she's curious about, in terms of measuring success, how long you need to wait or what a sufficient period would be.
I actually have a slide on measurement coming up, so if you're happy to leave that one for just a moment, Lynette, that would be great. Maybe you can come on the microphone when we get there and we can have a talk about that. So I'm going to go through just a very simple, this is what we do when we're working with most organisations, and the size, obviously for large companies when we work with them, the strategy needs to be much more integrated into their business plan and the other, there's a whole lot of complexities that come with that. But we basically use this same structure with most of our clients, and it doesn't need to be complicated. We all can look at social media and feel so overwhelmed, but it really doesn't need to be complicated. So to have just a table like this that looks at what's your current situation, how does it look now, how do you want it to look? And I would suggest, Lynette, to your point around measurement, that when you're starting out, you probably want to be looking at things on a monthly basis from a measurement perspective. But over time, you'd stretch that out to a quarterly, half yearly, and then, you know, once things are in full swing, it might be that the social media review happens as part of your annual strategic review. But generally, you want to break it down into smaller pieces, and things do change so quickly in social media. But you want to look at how does it look now and how do you want it to look. And in terms of the key indicators, everyone wants to start out with how many likes do we have on Facebook and how many should we have and how many do we want to have. And we did talk in the last webinar about, you know, the more you can focus on relationships and quality engagement rather than numbers, the more successful you'll be. But there is a place, particularly if you've got boards or people that you need to report into, generally they want to see numbers. So we generally make that the first goal. Website traffic is another really good one to look at, and we generally set about 20% increase month on month in terms of web traffic. So that's a fairly high benchmark, but if you're doing social media well, it's certainly achievable. So things like Google Analytics or your own web analytics can help you see which traffic's coming from social media. Newsletter subscribers is another measurement people often want to see, that their newsletter lists are increasing. But there are all sorts of objectives that you can set. So figure out what it is. And the key question, and I won't go into this in too much detail, but the key question you want to keep asking is, what behaviour do we want to influence? And that's generally not so much about numbers. So what's the behaviour that you want to influence? Do you want more enrolments? Do you want more people, more recommendations online? Do you want your students to rate your student support services higher? There's all sorts of behaviours that you might want to influence through social media, but keep asking that question of what's the behaviour that we want to influence. You then want to have an action plan for each of those objectives. So if the objective is increase, now you want, when you're doing, just to be really clear, when you're doing the objectives, saying we want to increase student enrollment is a fairly hard thing to measure. And in most small organisations, you don't have the technological sophistication. In fact, in a lot of large organisations, they don't have the technological sophistication to really measure this. So it might be that someone comes to your website from Facebook, but by the time they've had a look around and enrolled online, you have no idea that that student came to you from Facebook. So measurement can certainly be a challenge. So you want your metrics to be measurable. And that's what I'm talking about here. So for, if you want to increase traffic to your website, for example, what are the three or four things that you're going to do on social media that will drive traffic to your website? If you're going to increase subscriptions to your newsletter, what are those things that are going to drive that objective? So that's the first action plan that you want. Your next action plan you want to then be about the platforms. So on Facebook, what are the things that we're going to focus on in the next month, the next quarter, the next 6 months, the next 12 months. What strategies are we going to put in place on each of these platforms to help achieve our objectives? So I want to talk a bit now about content, and I did have this slide in our last webinar, but it's one that's really important. So large organisations generally are quite reactive in their social media. So you look at someone like Telstra, they don't need to put out a lot of content that builds community because they've got such an influx of people wanting to talk to them that that's their main focus. So their main focus is customer service and they react to what's coming in on their channels. They are fortunate enough to have enough brand awareness and enough reach that they don't need to work hard to build community. I don't want to get into the technical aspects of it now, but Facebook has an algorithm that runs in the background that determines whether people see your content or not. You'll know yourself that you can like a business page and then never see them again, but if you actually, in terms of your news feed, but if you actually go to their business page, you'll see that they're posting quite regularly. Might be the same with some of your friends on Facebook, and that's all determined by the algorithm that runs Facebook. And Facebook thinks that it knows, based on your behaviour online, thinks that it knows what's most relevant to you. And your job as a business is to be as relevant as possible to your target community, and the way that that, or your target audience, and the way that that is measured by Facebook is whether they engage with your content. So the best way to do that is to be proactive. You need to be putting out a content strategy or putting out content that is going to engage, create conversation, have people share, like, retweet, repost. So that's what I'm talking about here in terms of this content plan. You want to break down department silos. So make sure that if it's got a marketing function, you know, what else could that, how else could you market your upcoming program integrating other departments? So it might be about supporting your current students or encouraging your current students to talk about how great you are so that other students like them see that online. But really work across the organisation. So breaking down customer service, student support, marketing, IT. Generally, you want to have a cross-departmental approach. And I know that might sound funny for small organisations because you might be all those departments. But this is particularly for those that are in organisations that have larger departments. So really try and break down those silos. And social media can be a great culture change tool to actually start different kinds of communications within an organisation as well that might traditionally have been quite departmentalised. Your content needs to be shareable. You'll know that when you're on Facebook, if you see a post that says, buy my product, or enroll in this course, or here's how great we are, here's the latest award that we've won. Generally, you're not going to share that content with your friends. And if people are not sharing your content, you're missing the biggest benefit of social media, which is that your current best customers or students lead you to your next best customer or student. So make sure that your content is value add. You know, put out articles that actually make a difference to people. Put out things that inspire them, that are visually appealing. And generally this one is about creating an emotive response. So if you can meet, if someone's frustrated by something and you can meet their need or answer their query or inspire them or support them or make them laugh, that's the kind of content that they're going to share. We often talk about a 1-in-5 marketing ratio. Now, this is quite confronting for small organisations. But for every one marketing message, you really want to have 4 or 5 other pieces of content that are not talking about you. So this is really about getting your brand and your organisation out of the middle of the conversation. So stop shouting about yourself and really look at how you can add value, support, connect, engage, converse with, because broadcast marketing just doesn't work on social media. So some of the different kind of content types that you can look at, community engagement, you know, asking questions. If you could go to sleep tonight and have a degree tomorrow morning, what would it be in? You know, it's a silly question and it doesn't really add value to your business. But what it does do is people will answer those questions. You know, we do things with some clients like, have you got Monday morning-itis? How would you like your coffee? If we, if you could have lunch with somebody, you know, make it industry specific. So if it's about a particular course that you're running, if you could have lunch with an industry leader in this area, who would it be? You know, people engage with that kind of content. So asking questions, being in dialogue with your community. Inspirational quotes, a lot of people roll their eyes and say, oh, everybody's doing inspirational quotes. The reason they're doing them is because everybody shares them. Everybody likes them. It's the most shared content on social media. I know with one of our clients recently, we shared a story about a teaching professor and it was the one with, you know, stones and sand and water in a glass. It's a great old metaphor, is that the right word? It's a great story about teaching and learning and life, and that client has about 3,500 people on their page, and that was reached to over 17,500 people because of how often it was shared. And people like to be inspired. With Google at your fingertips, it's not hard to find content that is inspiring. So you definitely want that in your mix of content types. Use social media to educate your audiences. So use it to show aspects of your organisation, to answer questions, to share knowledge. NRMA do this really well, that all of the questions that come through their call centre, they write blogs about those questions, because most people will go to Google and type, how do I register for NRMA car insurance, or as an example, before they'll necessarily pick up the phone and want to stay on hold. So NRMA are doing a really good job of taking questions that are coming through a different meaning, a different medium, and turning that into quality content that they post on social media and online. And that really adds value to their customers because it's giving them another way to find that information really quickly and easily. American Air did a great campaign of short videos that explain some of the behind the scenes that they do in their company. So things like what happens when your bag goes down the chute, if you have lost luggage, you know, why did that happen? And they're kind of cute, quirky little pieces of content in the form of a video. But what it does is it says, look, if your bag gets lost, this is probably how it happened. And it's educating their customers so that they might have a bit more compassion towards their staff if that were to happen to them. So really look at how you can use these platforms to educate your communities. You definitely want to share news. Now you want to make this timely and relevant. So there probably aren't many organisations that couldn't use something like, and I don't mean, I want to be careful about how I phrase that, but you know, when there's a natural disaster or when there's something that's happening that's really touching people, it may be outside of your industry, it might be outside of what it is that you do, but to put out something that says, you know, today we're thinking about those who are affected in the bushfires. Now, if you're in WA, you probably wouldn't put that up if the bushfires are isolated to the Blue Mountains in Sydney. But doing that kind of newsworthy content, again, it affects the algorithm on Facebook. So things that are being talked about by lots of people get bumped to the top of the news feed. So you want to talk about things that are timely. But it also shows some human compassion, and it shows that you're, and it's not just about disasters, it's all sorts of news. We were doing some work with a tech company, and when Steve Jobs passed away, we wrote a blog for them about what it was that Steve Jobs, you know, what he contributed to the world. And it's still to this day the most visited page on their website. And what it means is that people come and find that and then have the ability to go and navigate through to other content on their website. So make sure that you include news that's timely and relevant, particularly if it's about a local community that you're in, or if it's of relevance to your students or your target demographic. Special offers and competitions work really well on social media, probably not as relevant in this context, but you might have, let's say one of the courses that you run is about art, you might put up the top three pieces of artwork and have your community vote on those. Those sorts of things where you can get community engagement can be really good for building your community, because every time those people are engaging, they're sharing your content with their own networks, leading you to your next best customers. And definitely there's marketing content, but the more that you can use content to promote your services, so the more you can use things like a blog post written by a student, or a piece of art to promote an upcoming art course, or so the more you can use content that people are likely to engage with rather than a broadcast message of buy our product, the more successful that will be. I definitely suggest having a fairly basic content calendar. The more that you can be prepared so that you know that on Monday on Facebook you're going to do an inspirational quote, because people feeling, you know, after having a great weekend, they don't really want to be studying, they don't really want to be at work, they don't really want to be wherever they are, that's a great time to do an inspirational quote. It might be that Tuesday is a blog post, Wednesday is a video, Thursday is a testimonial, I'm just making this up. But you might have a bit of a schedule that means that on the days when you don't have content, you can just go to your schedule and go, okay, I'm going to do that today. And it allows you to do some pre-scheduling and planning, because actually getting the right amount of content can be quite a challenge. So the more you can plan for that and then be adaptable when there's timely news, the more successful you'll certainly be. Some of the other things that are industry specific to you: advertising key enrolment dates, sharing facts and tips about students, courses, campuses, the local area if it's a location-based organisation, showcase student work. You know, it's great to highlight the successes of your online communities. The more you can make it about them and not about you, the more successful that will be. Highlight charity or community support that's conducted by students and staff. You can do blogs about study tips and other useful articles that support students whilst they're studying with you. Sharing alumni success stories. You know, if you did that once a month, checking in with people who've done your courses and really engaging with them and getting them to tell their story. And again, if you do have a local campus, then using it to promote what's happening on campus is certainly useful as well. Now, I'm going to pause here for a couple of questions, just so that we make sure we don't run out of time. I'll actually come back to that slide after. So, Catherine, are there any burning questions, or shall I keep going with some of the questions that I've articulated here?
I haven't seen any in the chat. I don't know if anybody wants to take the mic there.
Otherwise, I can keep going and you can percolate on questions for a little bit more. Certainly got plenty more to say.
I think Di's got her mic on there.
Hi, Kate. Just going back, I know I just put a quick thing on the posters on the chat as we're going, but all those things that you were talking about before, the where you said some are very expensive and some are not expensive, etc., like that, I was wondering, where do they fit in with the social media? I mean, are they different methods, or how are they used, like within Facebook or Twitter or whatever else we're talking about?
Sure. Look, I can certainly give you some of the ones that we use and that we recommend. There are thousands of tools though. So we've never found one tool that does everything that we need it to do. So we create a bit of a social media dashboard. I'll very quickly run through some of these. I've put the slide up now. I was going to come to this in a moment, but these won't be relevant to everybody and it's very hard to give blanket advice in this area. But some of the basics that I would certainly suggest for every organisation, you definitely want to have Google Analytics set up on your website because that's the only way generally to track the kind of success that you might be getting from your social media. I don't specialise in Google Analytics, so you want to talk to your IT people about that, but there is a module within Google Analytics that measures social media engagement and that can be quite sophisticated. So you can actually track that someone came from Facebook, read two articles and then enrolled in a program. I definitely suggest setting up Google Alerts, which are kind of a media alert. So you want to have it's free, just type in Google Alerts into Google and you'll get to the page. But you can put in the name of your organisation, the name of any high profile people in your organisation. So if you've got teachers or lecturers or people that are in the media, it's great to get alerts when they're in the media. That's the kind of stuff you definitely want to share. You might have, let's say you're an educational institution that does natural therapies, then you might have natural therapies as a Google alert. And what that will do is send you a daily email with articles from around the internet or around the web that you might want to share. So it's a great way of getting some good content. So we have Social Media Australia, Facebook, Twitter. We've got alerts set up for all of those things so that as soon as something breaks in our industry, we know about the news and we can share that. There are some much more sophisticated tools for, which are still free, but some strategies around aggregating content. So making sure that every time new blog posts are written that they come to you. We're not going to have time to go into those in any detail. Hootsuite is a great one for a great social media dashboard that allows you to look at Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn across the board so that you can see all of your social platforms in one place. I will say don't use those platforms to post to Facebook. The algorithm that runs Facebook penalises content that's posted from a third party by up to 70%. So if you're posting, it can seem like a great idea that you do one post and it posts to Twitter, LinkedIn and Facebook all at once. Isn't that great? But you'll find that that content doesn't get viewed very well on Facebook at all. So you want to always post directly in Facebook. But a dashboard like Hootsuite or TweetDeck can give you an overall glance at your social media and allow you to engage through that platform. TwitterCounter is a free tool that just allows, it gives you a weekly report on the growth in your Twitter community. Clout gives you the scores of people so that you can see how influential they are. EdgeRank Checker allows you to, I can see your question Liz and I'll come to you in just a moment, allows you to see the relevance of your content on Facebook. Facebook Analytics have got some, you know, their insights, although they do keep changing them on a regular basis at the moment, which is quite frustrating. They've got really good insights that can show you what's happening with your content on Facebook. Bitly is a URL shortener which allows you to track how many people are clicking on the content that you're sharing. Sprout Social is another dashboard. So I think it was Jan who asked the original question. I'm sorry that I can't give you a definitive answer, but there's so much out there that can help you track what you're doing. What I would say is start small. Choose, you know, set up your Google Analytics, set up your alerts and use Hootsuite to monitor what's happening and don't complicate it too much. And then as your social media grows, you can add in different tools. So I hope that that answers your question in a way that hasn't overwhelmed you. Liz, just in terms of if I always forget what the three T's are, the IFTTT, that is actually something that sets up tasks. So if an email comes in, a post goes to Facebook. Or if I do that, then this will happen. So that's a little bit more complicated. Yeah, that's right. If this, then that. So that's a little bit more complicated than what we're talking about here, but it's certainly a useful tool. We used it for a while, but then found that there were mistakes that would often happen that slip through, and anything that looks overly automated tends to turn people off. So if there aren't any other burning questions, I'm just going to skip back to this for one moment. People often ask me how often they should post. Definitely you want to be posting once a day. With scheduling in Facebook and scheduling through Hootsuite and things like Buffer, there's no reason why you can't post every day. So I would definitely suggest once a day. If you can manage two or three times a day, fantastic. That can happen much easier with a bit of planning. On Facebook, in terms of how often and how close together, the shelf life of an average post on Facebook is about 3 hours. So don't you start to cannibalise your own content if you post more regularly than that. You'll end up getting half the interaction on two posts rather than if you wait for 3 hours, you should get full interaction on both posts. In terms of times of day, look at your target demographic. You know, we do work with some clients, stay-at-home mums are their target demographic. So posting at about 3 o'clock is not necessarily the best time to post because they're generally out getting the kids from school. Although some people have found that posting at 20 to 3 works really well because they're sitting in their car on their phone waiting for their kids. So if you're target demographic is your students, then you probably don't want to be posting content when you know they're in class or when you know that they're studying. So generally, as a rule, what you want to be doing is between 7:30 or between 7 and 8:30 is kind of peak time in the morning because often people are travelling to work, or if they're slow starters in the day, they're lying in bed on their phone or looking at their phone while they're having breakfast. That sort of quarter to 12 to 1:30 around lunchtime, a lot of people are checking their social media. The 4:30 till 6 when people are leaving work, and then after 7 o'clock. So they tend to be the peak times. So make sure that you're posting at times that are relevant to your target audience. How many platforms you can manage? I can see that there's a question here saying, is it okay to put identical content on the different platforms? It is okay, but generally the way it's written is different. So Twitter, you've only got, you've got limited space that you don't have on Facebook. So you don't want to be posting something to Facebook that automatically posts to Twitter and then it truncates it and cuts it in half. That doesn't look very good. But it might be if you're sharing a blog post that on Twitter you just put the heading of the blog post and say click here to read more, whereas on Facebook you might have a bit more information to encourage people. But there's definitely the Twitterati, so those that really use Twitter a lot, it's very different conversational tone and messaging than it is on Facebook. So start small. I would suggest for most of you that Facebook is the best place to start. If you're really wanting to engage in kind of advocacy and media and industry, Twitter can be fantastic for that. LinkedIn, if you can develop a LinkedIn strategy where you're connecting with your students so that once they go into other professions, they're leading you to more people in that industry. You know, some of these platforms require daily focus and others don't. So Really be realistic about it. You're much better off putting all of your focus into Facebook and really making that work than spreading yourself across every platform and not doing a great job of it. We're going to run out of time, so I'm not going to go into the enough content. We've talked quite a bit about content, and I'm going to leave negative criticism for the moment. You want to integrate into everything you do. To really make it work, it's got to be online, offline, across your organisation. So definitely have buttons on your website. Have your social media icons in your email signatures. You know, you might have a promotional postcard or something that goes out with enrolment that says, like us on Facebook, get study tips, stay in touch, tell us how you're going. You know, people are lazy, so make it really easy for them to engage with you online. And if you do have an on-campus or a physical presence, then put signs up or do things that encourage students to join whilst they're on site with you. So I'm happy, I know we've got 5 minutes left and I do want to make sure that any other questions have been answered. So does anyone want to take the mic? I'd certainly say about that comic that you definitely want your focus to be about how can you help your communities, how can you add value, and that's the thing that's missing in most people's social media strategy. I'm happy to go back and talk about some of those other things if there aren't any questions.
I think Di just had a mic on there. Did you want to take the mic, Di?
Thanks, Catherine. I just have a question that probably was in the last webinar, which I unfortunately didn't get to. With U3 Online, we have a Facebook page, but it's as a group attached to something else, and people actually have to ask to be invited or they have to ask to be able to join. Just as a rough guide, would we be better off having a Facebook page that is a standalone? Does that get much better results?
It depends on the objectives that you're wanting to achieve, Di. So if the objective is student support, you'd probably want that to happen in a closed environment so that you can answer specific questions, because other people are probably not that interested in how they register with you or issues that they might be having with your online technology or with a lecturer. So groups have certainly got a place from a support mechanism. In terms of marketing, promotion, customer service, or building community, groups prevent all of that happening, because you miss the very thing that you want, which is for your current students or customers to lead you to other people like them. And when things are happening in a closed group, that's not seen by anybody else. So they certainly have a role to play, but it depends on the objectives that you have set for your organisation. Has anyone else got any questions, or shall I go back and do a say something just about this, how do you get enough content? Or actually, maybe the negative criticism is more relevant, because we did talk about quite a bit of content. We have a little formula that we tend to use for dealing with negative criticism. What you don't want to do is delete it. So if someone goes onto your Facebook page and says, you suck, I failed, excuse my language, it's not too politically correct, but you suck, I failed my course and you just want my money. I'm just using that as an example. Could be something that that comes up. What you would do in a situation like that is say, hi John, thanks for touching base, really sorry that that's been your experience. Would you send me a direct message so that I can follow it up with you. I'd be really happy to talk you through what it is that's happened. Clearly you're upset about it, something along those lines. So what you want to do is try and take the angst offline, because going back and forth, people can get, organisations can get quite defensive around negative criticism, and you don't want a tennis match back and forth between you and someone that's disgruntled. So take them offline. Hopefully they'll message you and you can give them a call. If you know who they are, you might preempt that and send an email or give them a call anyway, because you might have their details as a student. Go and deal with the issue for them in the way that you would deal with any complaint, but always come back and close the loop. So if you've talked to John on the telephone, you want to go back to Facebook and say, John, it was really great to speak with you today. Glad that we've resolved your issue. Look forward to having you, continue your studies with us. And what that does is it means that when the general public or other people that don't have any context about the negative criticism, they see that you've closed the loop. You haven't just shoved it under the carpet, which is what a lot of organisations do. So whilst you want to take it offline, absolutely go back and close that loop. If there's any abuse or swearing or language that's not tolerable to your organisation, so long as you've had the guidelines put up and people are really clear, it's fine to delete that. But you actually want to say that to your community. So sometimes there can be a whole lot of negative criticism about a particular issue, and if you are deleting stuff, you want to go back and say, we have deleted some comments recently. We'd like to remind you about our guidelines of this being a safe community where people feel respected and can share their views, or something along those lines. If you leave things for too long without addressing them, other people often jump in and support the other person. If you have a strong community where you've added great value, often your community will jump in and defend you. They're just some of the principles around dealing with negative criticism. But at the end of the day, keep it simple. So really come up with your basic strategy and stick to that for a while. But it's a bit of alchemy. It's a bit of testing, trying bits and pieces, do more of what works, less of what doesn't, but keep that real variety there. And we're really happy to answer any questions through social media as you're continuing on this journey. So I hope that that's been useful today.
That was fantastic. Thanks, Kate. I'm particularly interested in the social media management tools and the impact that using those tools such as Hootsuite, etc. on Facebook. I didn't know that, so that was really good. Thanks so much. That was wonderful. As I mentioned in the chat, that this recording of this will be on the website on Monday. So feel free for members to access. So feel free to access that. And a big thanks to Kate. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Catherine. It's been great being with you all.